This is the workshop on helping mothers. We're going to gear this session primarily around Titus 2, 3 to 5. Paul wrote to Titus telling him to identify and to teach older women so that they might be able to help the younger women. And I see the need for older women to teach younger women as one of the gravest needs in the U.S. church today. And I have pastors come up to me and they say, well, where do you find the older women to help the younger women? One young pastor in Illinois said, even some of our most devoted women of the church, once their children leave home, all seem to go back into the workforce, often just, I think, because they have not realized that there are other opportunities to minister in the body. So I see this as a very critical need in the church today. It's a need in the church, and it is certainly a need in our society. The situation that we're facing is very grave because everything in the world is bombarding the woman of the 80s with certain messages. And most of them are not only non-biblical, but many of them anti-biblical. And so there's tremendous pressure on younger women today to be drawn into a thought pattern that is not biblical. Helen Gurley Brown, who is the editor of Cosmopolitan magazine, has written a book called Having It All. And in it, she talks about, you can have a career, you can have a family, you can have a lean and mean body, it's this kind of a thing where you can have everything. And I think, especially for those of us who are a little older, we know you can't have everything, whether you're a man or a woman. That life demands choices, and that you can't have it all. You can't do it all. So we're living in a time in our society where the tax laws, the cartoon that I gave you, I thought was really very interesting. If you haven't had a chance to read that, just look it over. But it's true, there are many things in our in just our court system, our legislation, the pressure from the women's movement, just all different directions that are causing hardships on the family. Many in our congregations are women who've had a divorce and are living just about at the poverty level. So it's the economy, the tax laws, divorce. Half of the women with children under 1 year old are working. I mean, there are all kinds of pressures from our society today. Then our society has told women that mothering is not a worthy, a challenging enough occupation if you are really gifted and intelligent and capable. And the trouble is, women have believed it. And even Christian women have believed it. And so I think we have our work cut out for us in trying to elevate again a woman's idea of what she can accomplish as a mom. What do we need to communicate to mothers today? I think, first of all, we need to help them clarify their vision. Now, this is the way they see life, the way they see their task as a mother. I'm very challenged by the idea of, as a mother, that we're not only raising our kids till we send them off to college, but that we are having an impact for generations. And you think of Lois and Eunice, the mother and grandmother of Timothy. And Paul said, I have no one like Timothy. The others all care for their own things, but he cares for the things of Jesus Christ. And so here was a mother and a grandmother that we know very little about, except that Paul credited them with communicating the faith and teaching the scriptures to Timothy from the time he was just a very small child. I read an account that during the time of John Wesley, there was a man who used to go hear the evangelists preach with his pockets full of tomatoes to throw at the evangelists while they were preaching. But there was a phrase that he heard from the evangelist that would not let him go, and that was from Joshua 24, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And so on the morning of his wedding, this tomato thrower went out into the cornfields and knelt down and gave his life to Christ and said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Rushed to the church, married the girl who thought she was getting a tomato thrower. At the reception, he announces, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Well, I think the woman felt a bit defrauded, and I think it was some time before she came to Christ. But that was the first of eight generations to the present who are serving the Lord. And in the middle of those eight generations, the fourth generation, was Hudson Taylor, who founded the China Inland Mission. In Psalm 78, if you're balancing things, you can just listen. You don't need to turn to everything. I know when you don't have a table, it makes it difficult. 5 and 6, "He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our forefathers to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children." So there's four generations in that verse. In Jeremiah 35, the Lord says to Jeremiah, "Invite the Rechabites into the side room of the temple and give them wine." And so Jeremiah does this. Now, this is a non-Jewish people. And when Jeremiah offers them wine, they say, "Oh, we don't drink wine. Our forefather, Jonadab, told us not to drink wine, not to plant vineyards, not to plant crops, not to build houses. And all these many generations, we have followed the decrees of our forefather, Jonadab." And then it's as if the Lord, I'm paraphrasing, it's as if the Lord says to Jeremiah, "Oh, that I had generations that were faithful to me, like these people are faithful to, the Rechabites are faithful to Jonadab." And so I think we need to help mothers see that their job is not just getting their kids to the age of 18 so that they can get a Winnebago and tour the campgrounds in the winter or summer. But we need to help them see that this task is not just getting their own kids out on their own, but that they want to build into their children so that their children will build into their children, and this will go on for generations. And one of the things I pray is, Lord, I pray that all my children would love and serve you. That, and I don't mean full-time Christian, that kind of thing necessarily. And that you would bring them spouses who would love and serve you. And that you would intervene in the union of egg and sperm. And that all my grandchildren and all my great-grandchildren and all my great-great-grandchildren, until you come again, would love and serve you. So we want to help young mothers clarify their vision of what their task is. If they just see it as holding a diaper over the toilet and flushing and washing peanut butter off of the high chair tray and those kinds of jobs, they will approach it differently than if they see that they have the opportunity to impact the world for Christ for generations. The second thing that I believe we need to communicate to them, we need to help them evaluate their values. What is it that they think is important? One of the things that I found for myself is that sometimes I come to the end of a day and I feel very good about my day. There are other days when I come to the end of my day, or at least supper time, and I feel very discouraged about my day. Well, the thing that I've discovered is that I often feel good about my day if I have accomplished the things that are visible and tangible. You know, lots scratched off the do list, the house is in order, you know, those kinds of things. But I have discovered that some days I feel terrible at the end of a day when I have lived by essential values, when I've spent time with the Lord, when I have given good thought and time to my children, when I've made people more important than things. And I see that if I live for what makes me feel good at the end of every day, I will have lived for all the wrong things. And so we have to help mothers evaluate their lives in terms of what is really important. Because what is visible and tangible is temporal. And what is invisible is eternal. Now, I'm not saying, I think it's important to help mothers learn to keep their home and things like that. But it is so easy to neglect the things that are of highest importance because no one sees whether or not you've had a quiet time. No one sees whether you have, whether you sat down and read your children a story or whether you knelt down and looked them in the eye when they were talking. But everybody sees whether or not you got the kitchen floor scrubbed. So we need to help them evaluate their lives in terms of values, because we don't want them to be successful failures. And it's so easy, if we choose the wrong goals, to be successful and then to realize when it's too late that really we're failures because we chose the wrong things to give ourselves to. There has never been a time in all the world, I sincerely believe it, when women had so many choices to make. There are, the opportunities for us are tremendous. Now, I'm not 50 yet, but when I was ready to approach college, women had two choices if they went to college. They could be a teacher or a nurse. So many of the jobs that are available today weren't even heard of 20 years ago. And life is just broader and broader. But Anatoly Sharansky, the Jewish-Russian dissident that was finally released this past year, he said, "I was freer in Russia in prison than I am in Israel because I have so many choices. It's so hard to know the right thing to do. And so I feel like I'm not as free as I was when my life was more limited." And so I think we need to help women limit their lives in order to make the right choices and to value the things that are most important. One of the things that helps keep me on track is I say, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, how will I wish I had spent today? And I don't think that there will be many women sitting in the rocking chair knitting an afghan with a cat on their lap in their 80s thinking, "I always had a clean bathroom," if they neglected the things that were more important. So we need to help mothers value what is really important. We need to stir mothers today to a greater commitment. Now, Psalm 127:1 says, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain. We all acknowledge that there is nothing, absolutely nothing that we can do to make something spiritual happen in the lives of our children or in anybody else, right? That is a work of God. Nevertheless, God does not say, don't build, don't watch, don't stand guard in this verse. All he's saying is, you approach the jobs God gives you to do, the responsibilities, fully acknowledging that there is nothing that you can do that makes something spiritual happen in another person's life. However, Proverbs 14:1 says, every wise woman builds her house. And I think that 2 Kings 3 is a marvelous illustration of how we need to help mothers work along with God. You remember in 2 Kings 3, there are two, well, in 2 Kings 3 and 4, Ahab's son has just become, Joram has just become king. Mesha has been paying tribute to his father and says, okay, now that your father's dead, I'm not paying tribute anymore. So Joram forms an alliance with two other kings and said, we're going to go across the desert, we're going to make a sneak attack, and we are going to show Mesha who, what's what. So here are these kings and their armies, sneak attack across the desert. They get out on the desert and they run out of water. So they say, is there a man of God anywhere? And so the man of God says, the Lord says, dig ditches and I will fill them. And so the armies dig ditches, and in the morning when they wake up, they're full of water. Then the next account, I think, has the same principle. It is the prophet's widow whose sons are going to be taken into slavery if she can't pay her bills. And the prophet comes and he says, what do you have left? What are your resources? Well, I have a little bit of oil. Well, go to your neighbors, you and your sons, go to your neighbors, collect all the jars that you can, and then take them into your room and pour that little bit of oil you have into those jars. Do you remember what happened? The oil lasted as long as there were jars. When they got to the last jar, the oil ran out. In both of these cases, the kings and their armies and the woman and her sons could do nothing to fill the ditches or the jars, could they? What was their job? Dig ditches and collect jars. I believe as mothers or people ministering to anyone, our job is to dig the ditches and collect the jars and look to God to fill them. If the armies had dug two ditches, how much water would they have gotten? Two ditches worth. If they had dug 15 ditches, how much water would they have gotten? 15 ditches. Same way with the jars. So we need to say to moms, pay the price. Give yourself fully to this task because it extends beyond your own immediate family. It affects the whole cause of Christ. And so be willing to pay the price to give to your family. I remember when we lived in Tucson, Arizona, one summer I was a bit concerned about just some of the effects I was seeing of my children, the effects of peer influence on my children. They were in young elementary ages. And I decided that I would that summer work at drawing them close under my influence and limiting the amount of influence that other kids had on them for the summer. And so I was talking to this older mother that I really respect, and I said, what do you think of this, George? We lived in Tucson, and so there were three city pools 5 minutes from our house, and they were free. And I said, we'll blitz the house in the morning and then go to the pool and then come back and have our lunch, and I'll have them take a rest, and then we'll do crafts. And then late in the afternoon, then they can spend time with their friends. And she said this one sentence that kept me going all summer. She said, "Well, Jeannie, you have to make it happen." And I thought, isn't that the way it is? We can have these wonderful ideas, but unless we press through and do the grunt work, they don't happen. And so this is the kind of thing we have to encourage and stir mothers to. Make that commitment in their children's lives. Now, how do we help mothers today? I believe we must teach. The whole book of Titus, if you go through it, tomorrow, if you don't have something already planned for your quiet time, read through the book of Titus and circle the times the word teach is used. It is a book where Paul is saying to this young pastor, teach the whole congregation in general all this. Teach specific groups this. And it says early in the book, whole families have been ruined because of false teaching. And I think we see that today in our midst, where people do not have a biblical perspective and families are being ruined. And then he says, older women, my strategy for you, Titus, and this is from the NIV, it says, likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be kind, and to be subject to their own husbands, so that no one will malign the word of God. Well, I've had younger women say to me, where do you find the older women to teach you? And I said, well, look in your church for someone that you respect, someone who has a good reputation in the church, who has loved her husband and her children, and approach her. She said, oh, I've done that. And she backpedaled so fast, I thought she would fall over the pew. And we can understand that, can't we? There is a scarcity of older women qualified, willing, and equipped to teach. Now, what I would like you to do is the third sheet that I gave you, is this the one that says Titus 2, 3 to 5 at the top? Okay. What I would like you to do is to form into small groups and discuss these questions. The first question is, what lack do older women feel? Now, this is their perception, the women in your church. What do you think would be, if you approached the older women in your church and said, we'd like you to help the older women, the younger women, what do you think they would say? I wouldn't know what to say. So list the things that you think they might share as being obstacles for them in helping younger women. Then, what kind of help do older women need? Now, this is your perception from a place of leadership. What do you think, what kind of help do you think they would need in order to be able to help younger women? What kinds of materials would help older women help the younger women? And what kind of help would you like in mobilizing older women and or helping younger women? So if you would divide up maybe two groups on this side and two groups on this side, and please, at least one person write down what you're finding, because I'd like to have your findings. So if you would break up into those groups now, and then we'll get back together for a little bit of discussion. Let's gather back together now, please. We are discussing what lack in relationship to Titus 2, 3 to 5, the older women teaching the younger, what lack do you think the older women feel? Somebody.
In our group, we wondered if the feeling is, can we really communicate with the younger? Things change so much. On the same level.
Okay, another.
The lack of biblical qualification.
Okay. Okay. That would be two issues, wouldn't it? Lack of confidence and maybe feel a failure. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that. Yeah, I think we're going to have trouble finding older when they were perfect children. Okay. Fear, yes. Okay. And maybe some of these things are the things they fear. What else?
Time.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so they don't realize how many avenues are open to them. Somebody help me make that a nice short little... Oh, let's see. You all did some good thinking. What, anyone else? Anything else? Okay. You only have to take somebody's kids for a weekend to remember, though, right? Okay. Anything else? Yeah, there you go. Sorry, just a second.
Some feel that they really have done their part. I suppose that would be...
Paid their dues, huh?
Just seem to be no
longer interested. Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, there are some of the... lacks that older women feel, and I think there are some very good ones. I think you've really touched on quite a bit. Now, as you have thought from your perception, were there any things that came out from a little different perspective as you thought, okay, from your view in leadership, what kind of help do you feel older women need? I couldn't hear. Motivation. What do you mean by that? Attention from younger women? Okay.
Their specific abilities really are valuable.
contribution. Is valuable. Okay. Oh, I heard someone start another one. Oh, encouragement. Sorry. Okay. What else? Okay. What do you mean by that?
By being aware of what, if there's an inability, like they need a ride.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the older women are widows. They don't have anyone to take.
To bring them to something where they could make a contribution. Okay? Okay.
I think they have to be specifically included in a lot of the activities, say like a small prayer group. They have to be specifically asked to come along and participate. Otherwise, they feel like they're too old.
Good. Very good. Do we cover everything on your list? And whoever took notes, if you would make sure that I get a copy of that before you leave, I'd really like to have those. Anything else that you see as ways to help? What kind of materials? Did you come up with anything on that in that regard? Anything for regarding materials?
For
an older woman, how to help younger women. That is Cynthia Heald, who will be speaking. You may be going to her thing next. I'm not sure just what days she has hers. But she and I are, that's one of the things we're considering. Could we put together a manual that would help older women teach the younger? So was there any other materials that you felt would be helpful to you? And
we use a hotline.
Mm-hmm.
And as a pastor, like I suggested, I had contacted women from, say, 40 and above in this category to see if they would be willing. And most of them were thrilled. They would rather do something like that than too involved.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay.
Would you mind passing these out on this side and you on this side? And we'll continue on with this. What I'm planning to do in our time tomorrow is I have, I'm in my second year of what I call my Titus II group. And this is a group of young women from my church that I meet with, and it's the older woman teaching the younger. And so what I thought we'd do tomorrow is that I would, in as specific detail as you would like, go into just what we do in the group, what our objectives are, how I handle a session, and it will just be You know, I know that for older women helping younger, there are thousands upon thousands of things, models of things we could do. So this would just be one thing that would we could discuss and would give you ideas of one model of something that you might use. And then some of you can, well, I probably have time for you to share some of the things that you've seen work effectively or that you've tried. So the session tomorrow is designed to be as specific and practical. I think often when you come to these sessions, you think, well, I'm motivated and stimulated, but I still don't feel that I had the questions answered on, well, how do you go about it? And so that is the direction of what we'll handle tomorrow. Okay, I made a list of 10 things, and I will use some of your ideas to expand my list of how to help older women. Number one, I think we need to identify women of virtue. In Titus 2, the implication here is not that a woman is qualified just because she's older, but that the implication here is that you're looking for a woman of virtue, a woman of character, a woman who has sought to follow God, so that she can share out of her experience. Now, this does not mean a person who has not made any mistakes. She may have made some grave ones. But I think we need to look for women who are seeking to be God's woman. And so we need to help identify women who could teach the younger women. The second thing that I thought we needed to consider was we need to help them cultivate their spiritual lives. Now, as I work with young women, women with young children, I should say, you know how difficult it is to maintain a quiet time, get time for your Bible study when you have young children at home. And I feel that it's very important for us to help alleviate the guilt that younger women feel because they can't have the same kind of quiet time maybe that they had before they have children. But on the other side of the coin, I've noticed that women who may live on a starvation diet when they still have children at home, when their children leave for school, continue to live on a starvation diet. And I think that one of the things we need to do as leaders in the church is to stimulate and encourage and help women cultivate their spiritual lives. And so for older women, particularly many of them, and when I say older women, I don't necessarily mean someone whose children have left. A young woman can still be an older woman because of her experience and to women who are younger. But I think we need to help them cultivate their spiritual lives so that they have an overflow to minister from. And so whatever we need to do to challenge women, there are women whose children have left for school who could spend 2 mornings a week in Bible study, who could develop their own walks with the Lord in a way that they could make a very great contribution. The third thing is, and this came up, someone mentioned this in helping the older women from your list. We need to motivate them to examine their vision, just like we have to help the younger woman, because there is the possibility for them not only to influence their own family for generations, but to influence other families for generations. We had a pastor and his wife from the Washington, D.C. area tell us that they had modeled their family and their ministry after our family. Well, my husband and I sat down and we thought, what has been our contact with them? It's been so limited. Which showed me that it isn't always that something needs to be time intensive. That small bits of time with people. They were in our home, I think, maybe three times. And then we've, over the years, maybe had a meal with them twice. And God just multiplies. It's like the ditches and the water and the oil. So we need to help older women examine their vision. Help them to see that they can lead productive lives to the very end. We need to help them evaluate what are their values. Are they going to just kick back and retire? Are they going to? One pastor told me, he said, what I'm finding with people when they get to retirement age is they don't just retire from their job, they retire from life. Well, see, the whole book of Titus is teach, 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 teach. We need to lay a groundwork in our churches where we're telling people you can be fruitful to the end and lead productive lives. Their commitments, stimulate their commitments. I believe, what the same pastor told me, he said, as soon as children are out of the home, these women who have made a tremendous commitment to their own families just seem to go back into the marketplace. And he said, I don't understand it, but I think it's because we have not held up to them the opportunities to minister. And so they think, well, I can get all my housework done. I hardly mess up the house at all if it's just me and my husband here. There's not enough to occupy me, so I'll get a job and contribute to society. But we've not shared with them the possibility of ministering within the body to younger women. Four, we need to help older women overcome their reluctance. Now, we mentioned a number of things that cause this reluctance. Can I communicate with this younger generation? Where do I start? I don't know that I could be a Bible teacher. I don't have the background. You know, I'm just not confident that they'd want to hear from me. In fact, I didn't do such a great job with my own family. I'm afraid they might reject me. I'm not sure they want to hear from me. I don't know if I have anything of value to share. Younger women, they're going to seminars and learning from books. They get better stuff. They don't want to hear my ideas, whatever these things might be. Help them teach from their failures as well as their success. Some of the best advice I got from a woman was from a woman who said, if I could start over again, this is what I would do differently. Now, she's a godly woman, a missionary, seeking to follow God. But she said, in regards to my children, if I could start over, these are three things I would do differently. Well, that has helped me tremendously. It has affected the way I approached my own mothering. And so we need to help the women identify, think through on their things, and to be able to say, if I could start again, here's some things I'd do differently. There's value in that. It was mentioned, help her value what she has learned. Tremendous amount of experience in some of these older women. And it could range in many directions. Someone had said sometimes they think the only way you can minister is by sitting down and teaching. But there's a whole broad perspective, maybe helping some of the younger women learn how to can, or sharing some tips on stretching the budget, or many things like that. I think one of the major problems is we need to help her communicate it. In the younger women, I think they're much more, they find it much easier to express and articulate what they're learning than some of the older women. So there are older women who have sought to follow the Lord, but because there was nobody around at the time for them to say, this is what God's teaching me, this is what I'm learning, they can't even remember the lessons anymore. Or if they can, they think, how do you express that? And so it's very difficult to put it into words. Many have never thought through on what have I learned? What did I do and why? And I think what would help women is if we would get a group of older women together and just have somebody start sharing some lessons they've learned over the years. And I believe that would prime the pump so that other women would start saying, oh yeah, well I remember when, when I had three and diapers and, or whatever. But if you could perhaps get some groups of older women together where in a very non-threatening way you were allowing them the opportunity to just share from their experience with someone there who would say, Mildred, that's a wonderful lesson. And you know, that makes me think of Philippians 2. And help them tie their experience to Scripture in a way that they would then be able to say to someone younger, when my kids were in this situation, this is what I did. And look at Philippians 2. Do you see what I'm saying? So that you are helping them to articulate what they have learned. We need to teach the younger women to honor the older women, to be eager to learn from them. I've had older women say to me, the younger women all just want to be with their peers. They don't want older women in their meetings. They don't come to us for advice. They go to one another. There are older women who say, I would like to share with someone, but the younger women really don't seem to be interested. So I think part of what we need to do in our churches is provide a climate where we are saying, where we are teaching, where we are teaching the younger women, these older women have a lot to share. And where often we are the ones who kind of orchestrate it. Like it may be that if we get some older women together and they're sharing, there's somebody who shares something and you say, that's wonderful. Well, if you have a MOPS group, you might just say, I've asked Mildred to come today and just take 5 minutes to share this with you that she had shared with me that I think will be so helpful to you. Do you see what I'm saying? Where you are orchestrating getting these groups together when they may not be able to do it just on their own. So we're initiating get-togethers of older and younger women. Then 10, I think we need to extol the value of nonverbal ministries, hospitality, cooking. Some of you mentioned just the breadth of what older women could contribute. And tell the older women and the younger women, if you're going to be a disciple, that's a learner. And you have to be able to learn from seeing as well as from hearing. Some people can't articulate for you from their rich experience. But if you're around them, you will learn volumes if you keep your eyes open. I had an older woman tell me that she got a phone call from a young woman in the church and said, how do you make applesauce? And she said, come on over and I'll show you. There are things like that that can be of tremendous value. I remember when we were in a collegiate ministry, all my children were really young. And it bothered me that I couldn't sit down with these college girls and talk with them and share about quiet time or different things because I was busy with my children. When they'd come for Bible study, I'd be getting my kids off to bed. But over the years, I've received letters from these girls saying, now that I'm married and I have children, pictures come back to me of seeing you with your children, and I realize how much I learned just being in your home. So we need to help the older women see and match up people. Like it may be in a MOPS group where you would have an older woman come in and tell them about canning. Or, you know, there would just be things like this where you have to be alert to kind of make things happen to get the people together. Okay, we have just a couple of minutes. Does this stir any additional thinking in your minds or raise any questions for you? Yes. Good question. I don't know. I know that I am approached not quite as often by older women feeling like, I know this is taught in the scriptures that we should teach the younger women, but I'm not finding them responsive. I'm finding that people coming up to me saying that less than the younger women saying, where are the older women to teach us? But I do hear both.
Fun to the homemaker.
Yes, yes.
I mean, those are the joys that we get from, you know, the dusting is no thrill, but canning or quilting or those things are very rewarding to us. Mm-hmm. They don't happen, and
yes.
They're looking for them, and it's going to be a lot less.
This issue of a lack of models, I think, is a very important issue. I remember a young woman telling me she was in public relations for the city of Colorado Springs. And when she had her second child, she decided she'd stay home with her second child. She said, but I thought, what am I going to do all day? And then she said, I've read your book on mothering, and I don't know that I'll ever be able to do all that I could. But see, when your model is, a young woman wanted me to disciple her, and I said, well, tell me about yourself. And so she did a little bit, and then she said, now my priorities are, you know, God, and then my husband, and my children, and all. And so I said, well, what does that mean to you? What does it mean that each of those is your priority? And when she got to her children, she said, I give them a hot breakfast every morning. Kept waiting for the rest. That was it. She felt that if she got them off with a hot breakfast in the morning, she had made them a priority. Well, if you have not seen someone embellish the role of motherhood with love and commitment and vision and a solid value system, you can think you're doing all that you need to do, and it is bare bone. And that's why we need, that's right, we need models that show the enriching part, how you can enrich your children's lives, not just maintain them. That's good. Yes?
I find that there seems to be such a gulf between the older women and the younger women. A lot of the older women think that the way they lived their lives was the right way, and the way the younger women are doing it now really isn't right. And the younger women, they don't want to mix with the older women because they don't feel that the older women are spiritual enough. They want to have spiritual things.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And there's such a gulf.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm kind of in the middle age.
Yes.
But it just seems that it's so hard to bring them together.
Yes. And when you realize the older women did not have the books and the seminars, they did approach things differently. And that's why I think we need to be the ones who facilitate the kind of sharing. Like even in my ladies group that I, the women from my church that I meet with, often I have to facilitate the sharing. They'll call me and they'll say, oh, this week's Bible study was just so good. And they'll tell me about it. And I'd say, would you take 5 minutes during the study and think through and organize it so you give the background so they know where you're coming from and take them through in an orderly way what you've shared with me and limit it to 5 minutes. But I think this would really bless the women in the group. Well, I've tried to do that over the years with like Navigator staff women who've been under us. One of them would share something and to be able to say, that is great. Would you kind of put that together and take 10 minutes and share that the next time we get together? I think this would really be helpful to the other women. And so I think part of our job is to kind of keep our tentacles out for needs in the younger women and where we can kind of match them up and build this spirit of mutual appreciation.
Do you think that you need when you're matching younger women and older women to get a match of some sort of a similar income? Because obviously, the more that you have, the more it opens up more avenues of ways that you can stimulate your children. And I just wonder if there's a possibility of an older woman who had more to work with overpowering a younger woman who would feel inadequate because she didn't have the resources and therefore feel less powerful.
Well, and I think one thing is, the reason God put us in a body is because they're all different. Everybody can make different contributions. So I'm not thinking in this regard as like one older woman and one younger woman being the sole input. But it might be that you would prime the older woman's thinking to say, you know, her income is very, very limited, and if you just be alert to that in your sharing, she could feel overwhelmed if you were sharing about the kinds of things you were able to do with your children. And sometimes just being able to say, we were able to do this. We were very fortunate. I realize everyone isn't able to give piano lessons and that sort of thing. Yes.
I'm not hearing anyone mention a young mother that is divorced, has children that she's struggling to get to school and get to work herself, or the mother that is on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of those.
That's right.
And I think that in my generation, we don't see that, and we
mm-hmm.
don't have a dad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's part of the majority of society today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. I didn't develop that point, but the society in which we're in, the I read in the Plateauing Trap that the combined income of a baby boomer couple probably has less spending power than either of their fathers did, either one of their fathers would have. And so there are economic pressures. The divorce rate is leaving lots of women at the poverty level. And then many single mothers. And I think this is something that we do need to address. What have you found some things that are helpful?
I think probably the biggest thing is being available one-on-one, because they don't have time or the energy to come to another Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get their kids to bed at night, while they're in school, they're trying to study. They don't have extra hours to, mm-hmm. to come and go to a group. And so you need to be there one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
babysit their kids, be willing to stay home or to take care of one of the kids when they can't go to class because the kids have a cold.
Yeah.
Know that they need a plate of cookies.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good. Very good. In our church, we have all the children in the church have an adult prayer partner. And that's also a way that older people can be involved in the families of in younger families' lives. praying for.
One of the things I can help, or that I can do is like the working mom and maybe a single mom is maybe like every other week, leave them for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the one free time in heaven.
Very good.
And that's really
yes. Okay, dismiss.